God's good. All the time. Woo! That was a good job, John David. I love that thought. I do. I really enjoy the word that he just brought, because it's a good word. Because so often, you know, we there's just a reality that we do go through things. And there's nothing inside the Bible that says when you get saved, everything's going to be rainbows and Skittles and unicorns. Right? There's nothing in there. I love the thought of Job, and when you're reading the book of Job, that it says that the Lord wrought us, or basically he builds us in the lowest places of the earth. Think about that for a second. Just think about that. The Lord doesn't build you on the mountain peak. That's where we want to get built, right? We want to experience that, but the training ground isn't the mountain peak. The training ground is the lowest parts of the earth. Getting taught through low circumstances and low people doing low things to you and low circumstances. Are you following me? That is where this development is built inside of us, so that one day we have the endurance and the strength and the willpower, the fortitude by which we can walk up that mountain and be on the mountaintop one day. I love that. I think we miss that in the Christian circle sometimes. Because we think, oh, bad things are happening to me. God doesn't love me. God isn't real. God doesn't care. That's absolutely false. But that what I'm going through is God using to develop me so that I'll be able to stand on things seven times stronger than this in the future. Amen. I love that. I love that's not even what I'm preaching about, but I love everything about it. Like, everything about it. Amen? Or real quick, I want to say this. Someone asked today, and it reminded me I needed to say something. A couple weeks ago, we took up an offering for Alfred and his wife and his family to get out of Israel and to make their way back to America. He's from Israel, but her parents live here in the United States. They're back, okay? So that's a good thing. They made it back. We were able to help them do that. Thank you guys for everyone who gave to make that happen. We're going to kind of continue to partner with them, because the truth is that they're starting all over. They have left their home where they have lived ever since they've been married, and they raised their children there, and now they've come to a new country, right? And they are completely restarting, trying to find jobs, trying to find income, trying to figure out what they're going to do, which direction their life is going to lead, because as of right now, he's just not willing to take his family back into all of that, you know? I understand. Like, if I could get out, I would too. And so we are going to, as we can for a while, to partner with them just to help them restart life. And I hope soon we'll have them here at the church and have them preaching and going through all that. And you guys will actually get the meeting. So we're working on all that. But thank you guys for giving. And if you want to continue to give, you can. You just put that inside of missions, right? All you got to do is write missions inside of that for that offering. And we'll make sure that we help them. And there's several other missionaries that we help also. Amen? Father, I pray that you help this preacher preach, that you anoint my words and use them to encourage the church, to change us and to take us to the place that you have for us, Father. Don't leave us where we are, but take us to where you have for us. Give us a willing heart, willing hands, and willing feet. Thank you, Lord. Amen. I remember I got my minister's license. Guys, I was like 18 or not. I think it was 18 when I got my first minister's license. And so it was my exhorter license, and it gave me the ability to pastor a church if I would get an opportunity to pastor a church. But it's the first level. It took about a year of schooling and different tests and meeting with people for me to get to this. So I was 18 years old. I'm going through all this. I finally go take the test, and I'm so excited because I passed it. And because I passed it, my dad was like, "All right, son, it's time." I was like, "Yeah, right." I'm thinking, I'm gonna get up on stage. I'm about to go preach to 1,000. Dad's like, "I need you to go to this church. I don't know if anybody's going to show up. In fact, I think nobody might show up. But I need you to be prepared to preach if someone does show up." And so I go to this church, and I studied. Like, I was ready for like 2 weeks out, you know, because my first shebang in front of somebody. And so here I go. I drive about 45 minutes to this little church out in the middle of nowhere in North Carolina, and two people show up. And then one person left. I think somewhere inside of us, we have this idea of what it's going to look like when we start. Let me tell you, starting looks nothing like staying. But you have to be willing to just simply start somewhere. I came back and I told Dad, one guy showed up, another guy came and left, and here's the offering that the guy gave. And he's like, all right, son, welcome to the ministry. I was like, what do you want me to do now, Dad? He's like, I need you to go clean bathrooms. For 4 weeks. It was youth camp, right? And so my responsibilities, he gave me Mr. Ordained Minister of the Gospel. He gave me the responsibility of cleaning the dorms and the bathrooms after youth camp. But I enjoyed it. Let me be real honest. He let me hire a couple of my friends to stay after camp, and we all stayed, and we cleaned the dorms, and we did everything. And that was the beginning of my ministry. Like, that's it. I think we have an idea of what ministry is going to look like, but I'm just going to tell you, if you ever want to get into ministry, if you want to do something for the Lord, it's going to start way different than what you're thinking about. Because I've learned this lesson, guys. I've learned this lesson. If you're not willing to first serve people, then you'll never be worthy to lead people. It just doesn't exist. Jesus modeled, this is what it's going to look like to be one of my representations here on earth. You must deny yourself and pick up a cross. Your old self must die and your new self must come to life. And you got to be willing to wash people's feet, deal with people's junk, pray for them, believe for them, take all the heat. That's what he did, right? Take all the heat so that they may one day have a chance to know Jesus. And that's the reality of it. You guys, you want to know a secret? I still clean bathrooms. I don't know how it works for every ministry and every church, but what I'm trying to tell you is if I need to, I still do it. And so if you want to start and get involved in ministry, and I look at you and I say, hey, you're like, Pastor, what do you want me to do? You're like, I'm a good singer. I'm a good teacher. I'm like, cool. How about you get the bathroom stuff? And how about you follow me? And I'm not doing that to disregard you or to degrade you. I'm wanting to see if you're willing to do it all. Like, are you willing? This is what it really looks like. I'm just going to be real honest. I stand up here. On a Sunday, Starla stands up here on a Sunday. It looks amazing. On Monday, we're cleaning. Tuesdays, we're going to some place to pray for somebody, meet with somebody, have lunch with somebody, encourage them because they're down. Wednesday, I usually have to cut the grass. We're sanding new things and doing stuff we have no clue how to do. Thank the Lord for you two, all right? Teach me all kind of things that I had no clue how to do. I'm not doing it well. I've learned this lesson. If I do it bad enough, somebody will take over. Okay? And so I just start and I just try and people help. And that's just the reality of serving. But that's what it is to be a servant. Instead, I'm willing to do whatever it takes, whatever I need to do. I always think about this one group. There's this one group inside of the Bible. You find them in Numbers chapter 10 and verse 21, okay? In verse 21, you probably, I don't know if you've ever even heard of them. I don't know that you've ever caught them or followed them, but they're one of the tribes of Levi, all right? So they're part of the Levitical priesthood. And it's in Numbers 10, verse 21, it says, then the Kohathites, I'm going to say that right. Everybody say Kohathites. Now, if I said it wrong, you all said it wrong. The Kohathites sent out carrying the holy things. What did they do? They carried stuff, right? Their job, this is them in their Bible. Here they are, the Kohathites. They were sent out. What were they sent out to do? Preach the gospel. They were sent out to go stand on stages and save millions. No. So they were sent out to carry the holy things. The tabernacle would be prepared for their arrival. Now the Israelites, let's just walk back and kind of walk through all this. They spent 40 years wandering through the wilderness on their way to where? The promised land, right? They're on the way to the promised land. That's 40 years for this group of people of setting up camp and taking camp down. Setting it up, taking it down. 40 years. Every time God told them it's time to go, it's time to move. We're going to a new location. It was a process of setting up, cleaning up, taking down, setting up, cleaning up, taking down. 40 years. Are you with me? 40, that gets old real fast. I understand all this. I get tired of setting up and taking down tents after going on one camping trip. Like, I talk to me about it, Jerry. Just talk to me. He's been trying to teach the kids how to set up tents, all right? I'm just saying, and that we're setting up modern tents. You know what I'm saying? Like, the one with the fancy fiberglass poles where all you got to do practically is pop the thing together and the tent just springs up. I get sick of doing that junk. You know what I'm saying? Like, and 40 years. Now, the Hebrew text right here isn't real definitive, but I don't think they had those poles. I don't think that's the kind of tents that they were using. But you know who had it worse than the average Israelites? The priest. Everybody say it was the priest. I'm trying to tell you, it was these Levites. In addition to worrying about their own tents, they had to move the tabernacle as well. So they had their own house, their own tent, their own dwelling that they had to worry about, just like everybody else had to worry about. But then they also had to worry about this ornately designed, beautifully crafted by God, who gave direct instructions of how to care for it and how it's supposed to look and how it's supposed to be put together. You can't put it together wrong, because God's the one who said this is how you have to do it, right? And we know if you don't do it the way God said do it, it just ain't going to work, all right? And so it's this physical reminder, the tabernacle was, of the presence of God, and it was the very centerpiece of the campsite. All of Israel would camp for miles all the way around the tabernacle, and for 40 years, I've only been making my kids' bed up for about 12, and I'm sick of it. You feeling me? 40 years, y'all. 40 years they were responsible for taking it up, putting it down, putting it back together. Every board, every socket, every curtain ring, every cord, every pillar, every article, everything inside of, I know I'm going on here, but everything inside of this was their responsibility. And the Levites were the ones who had to load them up and make sure that they make it to the next campsite in the right order that God instructed them. You find that in Numbers chapter 10 if you want to go back and read it. Setting up, taking down. Setting up, taking down. Broadly speaking, the tribe of Levi can really be subdivided into primary family groups, right? So you have the son of Kohath, and that's who you have, the Kohathites. You have the sons of Gershon, all right? The Gershonites, right? And then you have the sons of Merari, and that's the Merarites, all right? And each one of these family clans are responsible for part of the tabernacle. All of them are they're responsible for part of it. And when it came time to move the camp, it was up to them to make it happen. Now, the Kohathites, they were responsible for the holy items. This was their responsibility. Inside the sanctuary, but only after the priest had covered them and prepared them. Then they would go in and they would take them and take care of them. The Gershonites took care of things like curtains and screens, as well as the coverings for the tabernacle itself. And then you had the Merarites, and they were responsible for the structural elements of the tabernacle, all the boards, the pillars, the sockets, the bars, everything that held the tabernacle together, okay? We get that in Numbers chapter 4 and verse 133, if you want to go back and read that. But it's You hear that they did all this, and it's not surprising that the priests have the tendency to take the spotlight over all the other Levitical brethren. Now, who were the priests? Well, the priests, according to God, were to come from the sons of Aaron, right? That's where the priests were to come from. Those would be the ones that would stand before you and do the sacrifices. It's where the high priest lineage would come from. It would all come from the sons of Aaron. And that had to be selected that way. Now, Aaron was one of the Kohathites. That's where he came from. But all the preachers and the altar people, now that was the sons of Aaron. And They were the ones who made the sacrifices, and they would point to the ultimate sacrifice, who would be Jesus Christ. They were the ones who interacted with all the holy things inside the tabernacle. They were the ones doing all this. The high priest was the one who would stand before the Ark of the Covenant on the Day of Atonement and make intercession for all of the people of Israel, for the entire nation. That's who those priests were. And so, in so many ways, these sons of Aaron, they were the stars of the show. Are you with me? Like, that's who they were. They were the intercessors. They were the judges. They were the middleman between the nation of Israel and God. That's who these people were. But the rest of the Levites, well, they were just people who had to move stuff. Right? Like, that was their responsibility. How many sermons have you encountered about the Levitical priesthood? Probably a lot, let's be honest. You probably heard about the priest quite so often when you come to church. But how many focused on the duties of the Kohathites or the Gershonites or the Merarites? Maybe you heard one sermon? Maybe none, right? Right? Probably none, most likely. Honestly, if it wasn't for the rebellion of Korah, if you guys remember that, I don't know that I would know who the Kohathites were either. To be completely honest with you, it flew under my radar for a long time. The rebellion of Korah is a fun read. If you want to go back and read that, that's when Moses got upset with these people and the earth opened up and swallowed the whole family in the tent and took them under. It's a fun read if you want to go back and read that. But everything, I didn't really know who these people were, but they had a role to play. Like, that's it. When you're reading through the Old Testament, it's very easy to forget that they're ever there, or possibly you never even noticed them to start with, because they operated within the peripheral of the Bible's narrative. They weren't in the center. They weren't what they were being called by name and everybody was talking about. No, they're back here, operating inside the biblical narrative. And it's easy to assume that they never contributed anything particularly meaningful to the bigger picture. At least until we ask this question. You ready? What happens when there's no people to move the tabernacle? What then? What happens when the Kohathites and the Gershonites and these Merarites, what happens when they don't show up to work? When they decide they're striking and they're done and they're tired, well, I'm going to tell you what happens. The tabernacle stays where it is. It doesn't move forward. It doesn't go on. Sure, the whole rest of Israel can journey to the next campsite. Everybody else can go ahead and go. But what happens when there's no altar? When there's no sacrifices? What happens when none of that's able to move forward, when there's no table for the showbread, and there's no curtain for the Ark of the Covenant, and there's no Ark of the Covenant at all? It's not even there. Why? Because they decided they weren't coming in. They weren't doing anything today. There's no walls. There's no coverings. There's no tabernacle. If they don't show up to work, these people who operated in the peripheral of the biblical narrative, if they didn't show up, it didn't move forward. Are you with me? The priest might have been the ones in all the spotlight, but the rest of the Levites, the ones who actually built the tabernacle, even though most of the Levites never came near the holy things of the tabernacle, they would have never seen them uncovered, they would have never really interacted with them, they were completely indispensable for the functioning of the tabernacle. It didn't happen without them. I think we miss this. I think we drive to a fast food restaurant and we order food and we look back and say, sons, you got to do better in life than work here. But there's no food without them. Do you follow me with this? How significant every individual actually is. We want to pretend as if everybody's going to be up here on the stage and getting on the spotlight, but that's not reality, is it? Everybody has a part to play. Everybody is significant. Everything is important. It was a role that made the entire operation of the tabernacle possible. What? You carry stuff. You just, where you want it, preacher? I'm here for you. What you want me to do? What you want? But without it, it doesn't happen. Are you following me? It just doesn't happen. What's the lesson? I think it's obvious. I think the lesson's obvious. It's not about the Levitical families and wandering through the desert for hundreds or for tons of years. It's about you and it's about me. We're talking about us here together. That's what we're talking about. That we don't all get to be priests. We don't all get all the significance. You don't get to be the big honcho everywhere, anywhere. Not at work, do you? No. Not at work. Some of us not even at home. Social circles, we're not always the big dog everywhere. And there comes to a point to where inside the church, though, we get upset with it. But we're here to serve. Most of us are going to operate in the background. I need everyone to grasp this. Behind the scenes, a lot of people will live their entire lives without being aware of exactly what it was they brought to the table. But I don't want you to have to live this way. I want you to know how valuable it is that you're a part of the church and that you're serving the church, and the church don't move forward without you, and we can't reach the lost without you. As insignificant as what you had just done may have seen, it doesn't function properly without you. We're not able to do as what we could do without you. We're limited. We're Ephesians 4:16. He makes the whole body fit together perfectly. As each part does its own special work, he helps the other parts grow, so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. What does every part have to do, though? Its own special work. Do you hear me? We all have to do its own special work. You probably don't know every joint in your body of how it all physically works, but I guarantee you there's some spiritual joints that you've never heard of either. I guarantee you there's some vital contributing members of this body that you never knew worked so hard so often. But they're showing up every single week so that you could enjoy service today. So that you can be here and make things happen. Last week, guys, we had a big Sunday. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if y'all did. I had a good time. We had over 200 people gather inside this place. We had 45 kids pile up inside the children's church. That's a big deal, guys. It's a big deal, okay? Like, we were excited. I asked you guys to invite your friends and invite your family. You guys responded, and I want to say as your pastor, thank you. Like thank you for responding, and because of your response, the whole place was full. We had a good service. I'm believing that lives were encouraged and changed, and over time, we'll have another opportunity to try to grab that family or grab that friend and get them to be a part of a church if they're not already part of them. But we have to begin somewhere, right? We have to begin planting these seeds and doing anything, but it took a lot of work to make that happen. I think sometimes we just come to church, and we don't realize what had to happen for me to be here and for it to be the way it is, right? When you arrived to a clean church. The parking lot ain't even dirty. Like, the church is clean. When you came last week, the church was clean. It smelled good. There was fancy little things, even in the bathrooms. Come on, ladies. You know what I'm talking about? Did any of y'all go in the bathrooms and think, oh, about to fix my hair up in here? You know, like, I know what y'all thought, because I walked into the men's bathroom, and I was like, I'm about to eat all that candy, like every bit of it. So I squirted me some cologne on me. I'm telling you. But these are just little things Starla's trying to think about, we're trying to do, to make people enjoy their experience, you know, so that if you show up right after work and you might smell a little bit, you can go to the bathroom, not smell anymore. We won't be, because we want you here. That's the point, is that we want people here. And you have all these people, we show up and we go into the bathroom and we use the bathroom, and when we fix our hair, we make ourselves look pretty. Then we had a great service and the air conditioner was cool and everything was feeling good. And then we walk to the back, and guess what? all the tables were already set up. We didn't even have to get our own chair. I'm trying to tell somebody, like, this is the reality of it. All these chairs were all set up, and they were decorated all nice, and I looked down the row, and I didn't cook one thing, y'all. But there was a whole lot of food there. I'm telling you, y'all, what we don't realize sometimes is that Summer's husband Dustin and Vashon and Levi and all these people are back there sweating to death. I don't know if you have been in that grill room we have in the back. It looks real cool, but it ain't functioning very cool right now. We're going to work on that. I'm going to try and tell you because the smoke was everywhere, right? We had to move the grills outside. But the hamburgers were good. The hot dogs were good. And then my kids got to run and jump on all these play-ups. And you know what? There was somebody driving the train around, and it wasn't me. I was just enjoying it. I was just watching kids do it. But somebody's serving. Somebody's making every bit of this possible. And there's way more unseen workers than seen. There's so many more. I think about all this. I think about the fact you don't realize this. I like to give people some credit where it's due. I like to celebrate some people every now and then. Y'all don't realize, but Leon and Linda, you know they show up every week and cut the grass. Every week, I try to pay them. They give me the money back. I'm trying to, y'all. Like, every week. They're showing up, they're cutting the grass. Leon even brought his tractor back here and cut a big old area with his bush hog so that we had enough room for the train and for the blow-ups all to sit back there so our kids could have a good time, we could eat in peace. You know, like, don't know he showed up that did that. Do you know that Ace and Hannah worked themselves to death all week? She's pregnant, and it was her birthday. And she showed up to work pregnant on her birthday to be in charge of 45 kids. And she set up all week excited about what they were going to do, and they had a good time. Y'all, Scott's here. John David's here. Do you guys know that they've been in this room sanding and working and hanging sheetrock? I'm just messing junk up. They're out there fixing everything. I'm trying to tell somebody, like, I'm out there doing it. And they've been working every – do you know they're coming all during the week just so that someday soon we'll have a coffee shop? It's coming soon and very soon. I don't know. It's coming, though. Just don't worry. It's on its way. But they're showing up and they're working. Vashon, I don't know if you realize it, his family and his crew, they showed up and brought 4 tiers of scaffolding and changed out all the bad ceiling tiles in the ceiling. Now, why are we doing all this? We want it to look good. We want people to walk in here and be proud of what we're proud of. You know, this is what we want. We want people not to have to walk in and think, oh. I just want them to be able to walk in and think, man, this place has got something going on, doesn't it? Look at all these kids running around. Man, that music program's good. That girls can sing. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can sing. Oh, man, it sounded good. Oh, the temperatures. Oh, it even smells good in here. It's a big deal. Like, it just is. It's all a big deal. All these people are showing up. Guys, I don't know if you realize it. The entire band, they show up here between 7:30 and 8 o'clock every Sunday morning. That's early. Like, y'all are asleep. Or at least just laying in the bed, staring at the ceiling, thinking, oh, I got to get up, you know? Them jokers are already here dressed and practicing so that we can enjoy the service. Miss Belinda, you showed up on Saturday and worked yourself to death. I'm trying to tell you, every one of y'all need to hug her as tight as you can hug her. Because every time we have a work day, her and Becky, you show up to work. They don't even show up to pretend. Like, they show up to work. You know, like, and they come and they clean, like, they're working on the entire church, getting the table set up, making everything ready to make it all happen. You got Andy. Do you guys know this guy shows up every Saturday to clean this church? Every Saturday, sometimes on Fridays, sometimes on Thursdays. I don't care what day he comes. I'm just happy that you're coming, man. I'm just trying to tell you. Like, but these people, they're always in the background. You didn't know that Mason showed up all throughout the week to put in all the words. Caden showed up early to make sure they're all working. All these things are going on. Tell me about it, Jerry. Tell him, Jerry. Jerry knows what I'm talking about. He's been running these boys' clubs for a long time, right? You need help. To make every bit of this happen, we have to have help. And you may think, oh, man, that's wonderful, Pastor. I'm so glad you got so many people to show up and help you. We need you. There's not a single person in this house that we don't need. We need all of you to help. Let me help you with something. Do you know why people get burnt out? Do you know why people get burnt out? It's because the same small group of people show up to do everything. So the average church in America, they say 20% of the people do 80% of the work. I ain't trying to have an average church. I don't know if you guys are trying to just go to an average church. That ain't where I'm trying to go. That ain't who I'm trying to be. That ain't who I'm trying to reach. I'm trying to tell somebody. And so what you have to understand is people get burnt out because it's the same small group of people that's showing up to make everything happen. And let me tell you, the amount of things it has to be done is extensive. There's a lot of things that you have to do every single week. It's like taking out the trash. Every time you turn around, the bin's full again, right? You just gotta keep on going at it, and you get exhausted. People show up, and we work, and we try to make everything happen, and we get exhausted, and we're just forcing ourselves. We got to do it. We got to show up. We got to make it happen. And every week, you're just, I got to go. There's nobody else who's going to do it. Until one day, the thought enters your head, you know what? If nobody else cares, I'm not going to care either. And then you realize you're exhausted. You burn out and you're tired. That's why burnout happens. It doesn't have to be that way, though. Do you know what makes serving a church fun, exhilarating, worth it? It's when you show up and your brothers and sisters show up with you. And you're able to do way more than you ever thought you were going to get done that day, because of the support that you had inside the place. And you get to hang out and you get to form relationships and make friends and go out to eat. It makes it fun for me. Like, I don't even mind showing up for a work day if everybody shows up and we get to eat and we get to laugh and we get to goof off, because I probably enjoy that as much as I enjoy anything I would have done that day. That's just the truth. Anything. But it makes everything happen. And it's just all these people who are operating in the periphery of the biblical narrative, of the church narrative here. And they're saying, I'm willing to serve, and I'm willing to help them. I'm willing to help make it all happen. The Kohathites, I think about them all the time. Honey, if you'll come and play the piano, I'll try to make myself shut up. They were this group of people whose responsibility was, it says, they were sent out to carry the articles of the tabernacle. Now, they're responsible for the inner chambers, this inner courtyard articles. That's what I mean. I'm talking about the articles of showbread, the lampstand, the incense, all of these different things that we hear about, right? They're in charge of all of these articles and making sure that they get transported where they need to go. But here's what got me as I was reading about all the different articles inside of the tabernacle, realizing that this small group of people were the ones who were responsible for all of them. There was one article in there that seemed so insignificant. It's a spoon. Did you guys know this? The inside the tabernacle, table of showbread, lampstand standing over here. That's magnificent. It's beautiful. The table's beautiful. All the bread's piled up. It looks wonderful. But in a plate sits a spoon. The spoon is what held the incense. You followed me? And there would be a fire that would be lit underneath the spoon, and it would heat up, and it would fill the whole room with the incense and with the smoke. And that was the responsibility of the spoon. And there was one person inside the tribe whose responsibility for his family is they were to make sure that the spoon got where it needed to be. Seems insignificant, doesn't it? It's just put it in your pocket. Just a little spoon. Until you think about the fact that if there wasn't a spoon, there would be nowhere to put the incense. And if there wasn't any incense, then there would be no fragrance filling the air. It said that the 24 elders held the golden bowls of incense, which represents the prayers of God's people. There it is, sitting right there on fire. But if that person forgot that spoon, if that person didn't show up, if that person didn't serve, if he felt like his position was unworthy or if it was insignificant or it wasn't a big deal, I'm just responsible for a food. What you have to understand is that without the incense, there's no presence. God said he would smell the incense and it would be a wonderful fragrance into his nostrils, and that he would hear us from heaven, realizing our prayer and respond on our behalf. You have to grab all this, guys. It was just somebody who said, honey, your job, on this is all I need you to do. And it's just me. I'm walking up to you. I'm the priest. It's all I need you to do, miss. I just need you to just take care of that spoon. That's all I need you to do. Seems like no big deal, but we forget. If there's no spoon, there's no incense. If there's no incense, there's no fragrance. If there's no fragrance, there's no presence. If God isn't there, we can't win. I can't get through. I can't become victorious. It ain't just you can't become victorious. We can't be victorious because we are God's people and we're living off his word. What he said to do. And so we're obedient to him, the Father, but without the spoon. And it's, honey, it's just showing up on Saturday, ain't it? It's just, I'm going to show up on Saturday. I'm going to come set up tables. Andy, it's just, that's it. That's all that it is, Andy. It's your spoon. And right now, your spoon's to show up whenever you do and make sure the church is clean. But it's your spoon. You may look at it and think, man, it's not a big deal. And I know, Andy, you have the best heart because you're excited to do it. I ain't never met somebody who's so excited to come clean the church, man. Thank you for that heart. Thank you for that heart. But it seems small, but it's so important. Because somebody's going to walk in here having a bad day. And they're going to be able to walk into a clean place that makes them not feel dirty. And somehow in their mind, they will translate, God can do this for me. They won't be distracted. No. But it's all because of something insignificant. It's something small, Levi. You know, it's climbing up scaffolding. It's putting in ceiling tiles. It's running sound. It's sitting in with somebody's kid. Right, Eden? It's a little, I get you, girl. It's a spoon. I know. It's like I got sitting there, them kids. I feel you, okay? But there's somebody who's going to show up because they've been asked. And they got their little kids with them. You know what they really need? They need an opportunity to be able to sit in a sanctuary where the presence of God fills the room without this mommy. Without this distraction, so it's just a spoon. It's all. It seems like it's nothing, but it's so huge. It's so huge that we show up and say, God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'll do whatever you need me to do. Where can I serve? Where can I help? I had a girl one time come to a church work day. Everybody was gathered inside the cafeteria area and we were delegating jobs and giving them all out, and well, she showed up late and she had a little attitude and she was a little bit hungry and she fussed because I didn't provide donuts, and she was expecting there to be donuts there, and all the donuts were ate and I did provide donuts, you just showed up late, right? And so the donuts were all gone, and so then she got there and she started to look at the list, and I said, hey honey, I was like, what you want to do? And I was like, well, I need somebody to clean bathrooms. So I don't want to do that. What else is there for me to do? I said, well, I need somebody who will organize and clean the children's church. Oh, I'm not any good at that. I don't want to do that. And I said, okay, well, I need somebody who's willing to mop the fellowship hall. Oh, that's too heavy. It hurts my back. And I don't want to do that either. To which, at that point, I'm done. You know, like, you fussed about the donuts, you showed up late and missed. And then you don't want to do anything to help. And I, in front of everybody, I don't know if I should have done it this way, guys, I'm be real honest with you. But I stood up and I looked her in the face. I said, honey, then what you need to do is go home. Because if you didn't come here to help, then you're just a bother. But what, well, is there anything else, Pastor, that I can do? Like I said, I need someone who will clean the kids' church. Okay, okay, Pastor, I'll do that. It seems so insignificant, guys, but it's so huge. It's so huge. You know what we're doing, church? We're growing. It's exciting for me, and I think it's exciting for everybody to come here and every single month have a few more people. Every single month we have a few more dollars in the checking account. Summer runs it. She got excited. She told me for the month of October, it's the best month we had all year in giving. And I thought we did real good a couple months ago when we hit 17,000, and now you guys have gone higher than that in your giving. But that's happening because people are showing up, and we're doing more, and we're having events, and we're going to try to reach more and do more. But we can't do it without you. And let me tell you, there's a job for everyone in the room. I don't want to work you to death. I want to have enough people to where we can put you on a schedule to where you're only having to serve once a month. You're only having to be in the nursery once a month, or run lyrics on the computer once a month, or serve somewhere once. That's all I'm looking for, okay? But I need people who said, you know what? I can help every now and then in this area. I don't mind that. Because we're growing.